You're listening to South Florida's good news station, WCNO Palm City.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content.
When I die and I lay me to rest, gonna go to the place that's the best. When I lay me down to die, going up to the spirit in the sky. Going up to the spirit in the sky. That's where I'm gonna go.
Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance.
Prepare yourself, you know it's a must. Gotta have a friend in Jesus. So you know that when you die, he's gonna recommend you to the spirit in the sky.
Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Marquette program, Joe Marquette.
We were in a rabbinical conference here for just the last few minutes, callers, because we have our messy Jew here, which is Alan Love, which is a retired prosecuting attorney from the great state of Wisconsin. Now, he prefers to be called a messianic Jew, but I think messy Jew just kind of rhymes better.
Well, I look messy, too. So.
No, actually, you've cleaned up quite a bit.
You did.
Somebody gave you a haircut.
A haircut. It's beard. True.
Beard. I mean, you buy him. What happened?
I just decided to get a haircut.
Okay. We don't want to do this more than twice a year, you know, but that's pretty good.
That's about it.
1-888-221-8990. Write that number down, Clash. Keep that next to the phone. If you're driving, ignore me. Well, we don't want you to have a wreck, but that number will lead you into the radio station. You can call that anytime. Talk to Pastor Dave, Pastor Tom, whoever answers the phone. They'll take your name and number, and we will get back to you. Back in 2004, give or take, Joe Martech, financial advisor, Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, Greg Fasula, attorney, decided to start doing radio shows so we could help people and answer questions and teach the things that we do for a living that would affect them on a daily basis. And then, over a period of time, we realized we did not have enough knowledge to answer all the questions, so we added Mr. Vince Rizzino, CPA extraordinaire. You can't put Esquire behind that because you have to be an attorney to do that.
Extraordinaire.
Yeah, extraordinaire. It's pretty good. Also a forensic attorney, and at one time he actually taught college level.
Exactly, but not at Columbia.
You see, that's an important part.
It was in New York City.
It was actually
on Long Island. It was State University.
Well, Long Island people think they're in a city.
Would that be
and
the
it's
title?
In Westbury.
Be the title of your memoirs, Vince? Not at Columbia.
I can see the book. I can see the book.
This is a little bit of a private joke because the first time I think we were on the air together, Joe announced that I was teaching at Columbia. I used to teach at Columbia, so I just want to set the record.
He set it straight. Well, since then I have not forgotten that line, and of course he had. See, I didn't even have to tell him the line. I just set him up, and he had to do it right away because he knew if I did, he didn't, I would. Anyway, then we also added Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, who, when we went through this last recession, the subject of real estates and deedbacks and foreclosures and short sales became monster. which led us to the last member of the group, which has been quite a few years now, which is Mike Paulus, mortgage broker. And what Mike has done for people, we had a call last week, Dave, you were here, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But Pastor Tom said this one lady called in and just raved about what Mike had done for her family to get them qualified and what the steps he went through that other people don't go through. And I will tell you what Mike has taught us as a group and what he's done for our people. When I say our people, the people that listen to our shows, it's just been wonderful. So the name of the game is obviously to educate people. Joe Martek, financial advisor. Vince Rosino, CPA. Dan Warren, independent insurance agent. Greg Fasula, attorney. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart. And Mike Paulus, mortgage broker. 1-888-221-8990. Now,
I was going to say, Joe, I got a 50% response rate not being here last week. My two followers on the show, one of them called, said, "Where were you?
I missed you." Patty K.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't Patty. It was the other one.
Was the other one? Well, you know.
But it was fun. He called me and said, "Where were you? I didn't hear you on the radio."
I had a very wonderful day today. You know, you're a father.
I am.
You're a father.
Yes, sir.
I'm a father. Alan, we never talked to you. Did you ever do this? No?
I am not a father.
You're not a father. So those of you that have listened to the show for a while know that my son went through a horrendous, horrendous physical problem and nearly died. In fact, he asked to die. And the day he asked to die, I begged for prayer on this very show. And, I mean, I begged for prayer. And we had people calling in and praying verbally on the phone. And I know there was many, many people that did. And I met with my son today. And my son is as close to being back to normal as you can possibly be.
Oh, thank the Lord God. For that.
And it was just one. I'm just wanted to share that because I've had a few people ask me that have heard the show, and I've not talked too much about it because it's such a to go from all the way as far as you can left to go all the way back to right. Mm-hmm. And understand the power of prayer. It was just mm-hmm. just because I tell you what, this kid was in worse than bad shape. I mean, he was within minutes of dying, and then the recovery period was horrific, what he went through. But hey, today he's back to the way he was, as I could see, prior to going through all this. So those of you that prayed, thank you so much, and understand that. You got a monster group in our group believing in the power of prayer.
Yeah, truly.
Absolutely.
Praise God.
Anyway, taxes. This is an exciting time of year for you.
Yes, it is. I don't know. I wouldn't exactly say it's exciting.
I know.
I would say that it's trying. It's taxing, Joe.
Play on words. What a way to phrase it.
Yeah, but no,
pun intended.
It's going well. You know, again, thank the Lord. I've got a number of new. In fact, I got a couple of calls from people who are listeners on CNO.
Now, you're still working on last year's tax code.
17 old tax code.
Yes. No, the new one.
New one's coming in, and people have asked me, and I go over it with them to the best of my knowledge. Because there's still an area there, Joe. It's got a lot of controversy right now, and that has to do with that extra 20% deduction for pass-through entities like S-corporations, LLCs. There's still some controversy as who qualifies for that.
So I understand CPAs don't qualify.
Well, now you see, here's the controversy. Now, they eliminate a lot of people from this list, you know, originally. Then it was softened a little bit to say, well, no, it's not that your designations prevents you, but it's the level of income that would exclude you.
Okay.
So we went from you're all out, in other words, engineers, architects, lawyers, you know, CPAs,
financial advisors,
all you people are excluded from this 20% pass-through deduction. Mm-hmm. And so forget about it. You guys are too wealthy. You don't need that. So I think there was an extreme pushback from everybody on this. And then it came out, well, it's open for interpretation. And then, by the way, it's got income limitations. So
what are the income limits?
Well, if you're making on a joint basis now, if you make more than $300,000.
Adjusted gross. That's after expenses.
After expenses. If you make more than $300,000, then you would no longer, or 315 to be exact, you'd be no longer eligible for that 20%.
So it may pay to not make too much money.
If you're a single, on the other hand, you could, it's 157, they cut it back.
157? Okay.
But now what I've been reading is that the Congress, since there's all kinds of opportunities, see, the AICPA, who I'm a member of, it's the National Association of CPAs, they've been lobbying Washington, because it puts us CPAs in an awkward spot, because clients are asking us for guidance on entity formation, form a new entity to take advantage of all these things, and we don't really have definitive answers.
See, here's the harder part. So it's like, here's Joe Martek, financial advisor, and this is now March.
Mm-hmm.
They might come back and say, well, you had to have been a X LLC, C Corp, S Corp, whatever it is, on January in order to qualify. You don't know the answer to that.
Don't know the answer. But the thing, the good news is there's a lot of people lobbying, and the Congress knows that it needs to define these things better.
Yeah.
And the IRS is going to need to come out regulations to give us all guidance. Now, this is going to take time. I think by the end of the summer or the fall, we'll have much better guidance.
So as we simplify the tax code, they'll just add another 20,000 pages.
Yeah, at least 15. It's no such thing as simplifying the code. Remember, everybody asked me that. Well, I guess I'll be able to file my taxes on the back of a postcard.
Right.
I don't think they make a postcard that big.
As long as that postcard's 80 feet by 20 feet, you're okay. And you're going to need a ladder, because, and it's got to be in fine print.
You know what they're moving towards? They're moving towards eliminating a lot of itemized deductions.
Yeah, right.
And going more towards a flat rate, although, you know, they don't want to call it that.
Yeah, right.
But they're going towards more of eliminate all of these deductions and just manage the rate that they're taxing you at.
See, the problem they've gotten, you and I both know this, many businesses have real expenses that they need to take off, because, you know, let's just say you're a manufacturing company and you buy materials, raw materials, you then manufacture them, and then you go and then deliver that product. Well, there's all these expenses that come off in between. So it's very difficult for them to start saying, we're not going to have this expense, that expense, and that expense.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. I don't know if Pastor wants to jump in. Did you have something?
We had a caller that didn't want to go on the air, but she has a question.
Oh. Good, I like questions.
So, may I ask it now, or would you?
Why don't you ask it now? Because you know, at your age, you might forget.
Forget what?
Okay.
Okay. This lovely lady called, and she said that she has a piece of property. There's no mortgage, and she and her and one of her sons is named on the property on the deed, but she would like to have his name removed and another son's name put on there, and she wasn't sure of the process, what she needs to do to accomplish that, and if there'd be any penalties.
Here comes the magic question. Is this a piece of land? Is this a residence?
She said it's a piece of land.
Not a house.
I don't believe there's a house on it.
Now, if Vince and I are partners on a house, let's just give you the example.
Okay.
Now, forget mom for a minute. But Vince and I, Vince is the mom, I'm the son. Okay? And Vince wants to get rid of me from this house.
I don't know if I like this analogy.
This is not a pretty picture.
No.
Okay, father and son. How's that?
Okay, better.
Now, even though I'm technically older than you, you look older than me, so we might figure this out.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, Joe.
So now father and son own this piece of property together, and the deed is in both names.
Right.
Okay? And dad says to me, Joe, I don't want you on this deed. I'm going to take you off, and I'm going to put your brother on. And I say, no. It's done. I mean, once that deed is written and I own that property with my dad, the two of us, you know, I want to come off of that. That's okay. I can deed my portion back to my dad or to somebody else, but I own my portion. Am I right, Vince?
Yes, but that may be true, and I don't know the legalities, but I can tell you from a tax point of view, it depends on the value of the land. Because you can take somebody off, you can add somebody on, but you can't do, there has tax implications to it potentially.
However, I'm not concerned about the tax implications, which you are, and they should be, but the reality is this. If you and I, Dave, owned a piece of property together, and I said, I want you to give me back that piece of property, and I'm going to give it to Vince, you'd say, fine, but I want money for it.
Right.
You see, you can't, and if you would say, fine, I will deed it back to him and just give him a quit claim deed. Now, there might be tax implications, but what is your motivation to do that? So this mother or father that called and wants to remove one son and add another, she's got to get that son to agree to that.
And it's got to be either it's got to be recorded as a sale and a purchase,
or
as a gift,
or as a gift,
and a gift, and right. and it could be a gift from one to the other.
Basically. Now that son that she wants to get rid of and add the other one, he could literally gift his portion to the other brother or the son, her mother's son. Now, there's a quitclaim deed, there's $10 and other valuable considerations, there's lots of ways to deed it. Tax implications I'm not going to get into, but the reality is this, the one that she wants to get rid of, if he doesn't agree to it, she's not going to get rid of.
Not if he's on the deed.
No.
Unless mm-hmm. she buys the child out.
Well, if he agrees.
If he agrees, mm-hmm. and she buys him out, fair compensation, and then she can gift it to her.
It doesn't even need to be fair. It's whatever he, if he says no.
Well, fair meaning,
yeah.
from his point of view, he's going to want to be
compensated for what is fair.
You know,
however, now we have a really messy situation, because when mm-hmm. you get an argument in families, I mean, this is a triangle, and let me tell you, normally things like this don't come up unless we're having an argument.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it.
Could be.
Yeah, and why would you take one off, put the other on? If anything, you just add the second one. Say, okay, we're all going
to
share this.
We could say, okay, to your brother, I could say, hey, fine, we want to add your brother into this, so instead of being 50-50, it'll be third. I'm willing to give up a portion of mine. You give up a portion of yours, we'll add your brother in. Still, you got a problem. You have to agree to that. And you have just diluted your portion of that equity, of that ownership.
You know, they could have avoided all this, Joe.
Well,
you know how they do that. They should have put it into a trust, named the beneficiaries, yep. and then she could have changed those beneficiaries a lot easier than changing the names on the deed.
Right.
The deed could have been in the name of the trust.
Here's where we go into this regularly. If Vince and I are partners on a piece of property, okay? Now, we could be husband and wife, even though you're kind of funny looking, or we could just be two different
partners. You're just not my type, Joe.
Well, you know, you're too old for me. Anyway, so the problem I've... I know. Dave's raising his eyes to heaven. Anyway, the key is this. We are now partners right. on this piece of property. And in order to remove one partner and deed back that piece of property to the other, it's an agreement. What Vince was leading into is, let's say Vince and I own a piece of property together, and Vince gets sued, and a lawsuit comes along,
mm-hmm.
and he loses the lawsuit, and he has to settle. They would go back to his assets and say he may lose his half of that piece of property in a lawsuit.
That's a different thing. Actually, I wasn't alluding to that, although that is important. I was alluding to the fact that it's a lot easier to change beneficiaries than it is to change deed title.
In a trust now, the trust owns it, and the trust is an inanimate object, sits all by itself. It has a trustee, which is, say, Mom. Mom says, okay, fine, I keep that property in the name of the trust, which I control, and when I die, it goes to my two sons, 50-50 or 60-40.
You can do whatever you want with it.
Or she can change it 10 times
she
while she's alive.
She can take one out, put another one in. She can do whatever she wants.
Whatever she wants.
Well, if the son who's currently on the deed is amenable to switching places with the other son, would you recommend that she see an attorney and do a trust instead of switching his name out just on the deed?
That depends on what her ultimate goal is here.
Yeah.
I don't know her circumstances. It's hard to get that in. I couldn't give you a real concrete answer there.
Yeah.
In a perfect world, I'd say yes.
Yeah.
But there may be other reasons why she's... Maybe this is, like Joe said, could be an argument. Maybe she'll change her mind next week. We don't.
But here's another problem. There can be, maybe, a tax implication, because I don't... If I own a piece of property, let's say worth $100,000, let's just say that's what it's assessed at by the county, and I just give it to you, and I don't charge you one dime. The county is not too happy about that as far as taxes go, and the Internal Revenue might say, wait a minute.
The county's going to get their money either way.
They're going to get it.
The IRS is a different matter, because there is a gift tax situation,
so potentially. Now you have another potential problem. So this is not a simple thing to do. Back to Vince's original thing. If Mom did this thing right, they could quit claim deed the property into a trust right now, the two, and then beneficiaries, and Mom could be the trustee even along with her sons. I mean, an attorney becomes a smart person at this point. Wouldn't you say, Vince?
Yeah, I would recommend that she visit with somebody like Greg. Greg would be perfect to talk
about. All it amounts to is they need to be counseled properly on how to accomplish the goal and to avoid tax, if at all humanly possible. I mean, I have seen, and you have Vince probably more than I have, some terrible decisions made where people have donated thousands of dollars to the government, taxes, that they didn't have to because right. they were given bad advice or they made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So literally, a CPA, obviously, that knows the tax codes and knows what's going on, a credible financial advisor, and third, an attorney. These three people can actually save a person a fortune by making a better decision.
And we can, if anyone calls the station for information on any member of the team, we can help them to know how they're available.
Yeah.
How they can get a hold of them.
1-888-221-8990. Let's stay with Mom for a minute. Let's assume Mom has a house and Mom had it homesteaded. But while it's homesteaded, she decides to go add a child to the deed who lives up in Maine. Guess what happened? That homestead protections in the state of Florida might be invalidated because the son in Maine gets sued and they find the house in that child's name in Florida. Guess what? That's the kid's asset. They can force sale of that, foreclose on it, do whatever to satisfy a judgment from a different state. You got to be very, very careful. So I have not seen a circumstance yet that could not be avoided by putting the house either in a trust or naming beneficiaries in a will, but don't add the kids to the ownership because mm-hmm. that could become a major problem. And it could void your homestead, which is a big deal. Homestead in Florida, some people don't know, but I think most do. If you get sued for $10 million, your homestead is exempt from attachment by creditors. So you could have a terrible car accident, and it could be a quote accident, and you could get sued and lose, and your insurance company pays the 10 or 20 or 50, and they come back for $10 million or $2 million or $1 million judgment on you. Your assets are gone, except certain things are exempt. Your homestead, IRA accounts, retirement accounts, and annuities. So you have certain things that are exempt. So you just have to wear your hat, and what you got to do is not be afraid to ask questions of a professional who does this for a living. When I'm talking to a CPA or a financial advisor, and especially a CPA, I know some financial advisors that would scare me a little bit, but a CPA, I mean, you're really educated in this, and you've got the credentials to make those decisions.
Yeah, it's amazing to me, Joe, every year that the circumstances clients find themselves in because mm-hmm. they were ignorant to things. And ignorant, I don't mean that in a bad way. Ignorant is just means you don't have knowledge.
Right.
Lack of knowledge.
That's all it means. That's all it amounts to.
There are a lot of ignorant people out there, including myself. I mean, a lot of things I don't know about either. But the thing is, the answer is if you need to know, you go seek out the people that know.
That's it.
But you don't know, and you seek advice.
That's it. 1-888-221-8990. So don't take this subject lightly, folks. And I have it happen regularly. It seems like once a month I hear about a mom, especially moms want to add their kids to their real estate. My girlfriend Deborah, her mom, in Missouri, it's called Missouri for those of you that have ever been there, but it's Missouri to me because I've been there. Anyway, she wanted to put the kids on the deed of the house. And I strongly said, no, Mom, don't do that. You know, but I want them to get it when I die. I said, just make it in a will or a trust and you don't have to worry about it. But if they get sued, you could lose your house. So you just don't want to do
it. There's something else, Joe, that's even more important than that, is upon death, the house gets a step up in basis. What does that mean?
Yeah, explain that.
For tax purposes, every asset has a tax cost.
Right.
So let's say you spent $50,000 on the house.
Right.
And you bought it 25 years ago. Well, if you wait to pass and then pass that house on to your beneficiaries.
After you die.
That house today might be worth $250,000.
Right.
Well, the tax law reads that your tax cost goes from $50,000 to $250,000 when you pass. That's called a step up.
Right.
To fair market value. And then your beneficiaries, if they turn around and sell that house, their tax cost is the $250,000. So
right.
if they sell it for $250,000 and the tax cost is $250,000, you've got no gain or loss. Now take the flip side of that. she decides that she's going to gift it away while she's still
while
alive.
While she's alive, right?
And she says, add them to the deed. I'm going to add them to the deed and gift it to them. Well, guess what? Only the piece that she owns would be stepped up to the fair market. The other two would maintain the whatever basis mom had. So if it's that same $50,000 house.
But what happens when she died if they were on the deed and she's gone?
Well, then her piece, let's say she owns a third.
Right.
Well, then her third would get stepped up and the other two would have their original cost. So if they turn around and sell that house, a third goes up to fair market, the other two-thirds stay at the original cost.
Now, people, here's the reality. A credible tax preparer is going to ask these questions to make sure, because when a tax preparer signs their name on the tax thing...
I'm going to correct you on that, Joe. Not just a tax preparer. There's plenty of tax preparers that don't know the law. There's plenty of CPAs out there that do. So I'd say go to the professionals.
Go to a professional.
There's a difference in my mind between a tax preparer and a
CPA. isn't there a liability
knock on the tax preparers.
I understand. But isn't there a liability even to a tax preparer?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
If they sign on this dotted line and say, I prepared your taxes, you could say, okay, fine, I only did it on what you told me, and I never asked you a question if it was right or wrong or true, but that's not the way the rules work.
You know, the problem you have, Joe, with that, and I don't mean to knock any particular preparer or firm, but a lot of the bigger outfits, they may only send their people to school for a week.
Of course.
Two weeks. And you don't really learn the law. You learn how to prepare a tax return. You know how to fill in a box. You know where to put this, that, and the other thing and generate a tax return. But you may not know the law and to how to benefit the client.
Well,
the max.
What Vince just said, and this is an absolute, and I know this, and I'm not tooting his horn, but the credential CPA is a whole different thing than going through a 1 or 2 week course and hitting one of the big chains. Now, the big chains, the people that do these tax preparers, if they are simple returns,
if they're simple,
it's not a big deal.
But if you're taking things like this, where there are gifts, where there's step-ups, there's an estate involved, or even businesses, some of them, I've followed up on a lot of them, so I've had experience with it.
Yes, sir.
Can I raise my hand? This is a class. Can I raise my hand?
Yes, sir.
And ask Vince a question?
You're gonna.
Well, you're very kind, since I'm really the chaplain for this program, and I do a lot of silent praying for everybody. But
sometimes those prayers, when you look at me and give me that dirty look, is that a prayer?
No. Well, that's not a dirty look. No, that's intense theological reflection.
Oh, theological reflection. Oh boy! Can we turn dirty look into two four syllable words?
It's a theological
I went 3 years of seminary. I got all of those.
So you got all those four syllables.
But this is a question, and as a pastor, now we have a lot of pastors that listen in, and so this would be crucial. As a pastor, when I was in seminary, they said, when you graduate and you get a job in the church, make sure you find a CPA or an accountant that understands pastors' taxes.
Right.
Now, I know you do, Vince. Because there are things that pastors can write off, like businesses with Schedule C and that sort of thing. And I've saved thousands of dollars a year, but a lot of pastors don't know this. But there's something recently that occurred last year, I think 2017, a federal court, I forget which state, I'm going to say Michigan, it could be Wisconsin or Wyoming, whatever, but federal court heard a case filed by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, they're atheist folks, and the case had to do with the fact that pastors have a way of writing off their household costs,
correct,
like the taxes we pay on our mortgage and anything to do with the house, repairs, renovation, whatever. That they said that it wasn't fair because lay employees of the church don't have the same benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that court upheld that position. So my question is that going to impact nationally, or is that simply a state issue?
Well, no. If it's a federal court and a federal ruling, then the IRS will have to deal with that, mm-hmm, because that becomes interpretation of federal law. So that has impacts to the IRS and the way they interpret. And they do it all the time. Yeah. They go to court, you go to tax court. They find that all the time. Then they get ruled against the four, and that is held to be governing for the IRS.
In fact, I just had this exact circumstance that you're talking about from a listener who is a pastor. And he has a retirement account, and it's held by an organization that's a part of the mother church.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a 501c, which is a nonprofit, but then there's other sub-letters, C3b and 9 and so on.
C4,
well,
C6.
Here was the discussion, and just like you're saying, let's say I'm a self-employed person and I work from my house. Normally, I can declare a portion of my house as a business expense because that's my office.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what the percentage is one room or 20%, pick a number, but there's a definition, and I take care of all the expenses from my house and I deduct that portion from my taxes. Well, the pastors can do the same thing. However, according to what I heard was, this ordained minister has some benefits even after they're no longer active in the church, that this category allows them to continue to take that portion and declare it as a business expense. Now, in defense of most clergy, in defense of you, you don't ever retire whether you like it or not. It
hasn't happened to me yet.
No. I mean, you know, the only way to get out if you're a part of the clergy is
you
to die.
68 years.
Yeah, well, you know, and literally, if you don't get fried, if that brain keeps working, you're going to counsel until you're dead. I mean, that's just what it is.
Yep.
So literally, I think the tax code gave some benefits
latitude
there because of, and there might be a certain way that it has to be held rather than in a traditional held vehicle. So anyway, what you're saying is it pays a pastor to ask these questions and to find out.
Exactly. And many pastors think, you know, you go to a guy like you, you're smart and everything, but it's going to cost you a few $100 to do a more complicated.
Depending,
but you know what? I'm speaking personally now.
Yeah.
And I'm speaking to pastors that have been penny wise and pound foolish. And
mm-hmm.
I love you guys and gals, but my CPA over the last 30 some years, whoever they may be over that time, have saved me a lot of money.
Yeah, big time.
And more than I'd ever would have imagined.
Well, and there's probably guys that might even specialize in some organizations that work with church organizations, and they really stay up on top of that form of the law.
But, exactly. It's a specialty,
but,
no doubt.
Yeah. But there are code numbers and letters that are attached to.
Yeah, and you can research whatever you don't have experience on.
Yeah, exactly.
You can research, and there's plenty of it out there.
1 year I did my own taxes with, what is that, TurboTax?
TurboTax.
When I punched the return button to get all the forms, I ended up owing a little over $9,000 to the government.
Wow.
So I, with my tail between my legs,
went down to your CPA.
And the TurboTax still steaming in the trash can, I went down to my CPA and I confessed, because we're good at this, being Christian. And so when I gave her my stuff, and when she called me to pick it up, the government owed me $9.
Wow.
Now, see, I went through every step. I filled out the Schedule C.
You're a walking testament.
Well,
why people
and I'm not
try
an idiot.
All
but the point is,
no,
is that
no, you don't know
I hear
you don't
that's
I,
not
I
my
hear,
thing.
It's ignorance.
But so many people do that, and they don't know.
Well, you know what it is, too? And listen, do you think anybody wants to pay anybody for doing anything?
No.
The answer is nobody wants to pay anybody for doing anything. So what happens is, I think everybody alive, at least the four of us sitting here, have made a mistake or two in life by trying to cut a corner, and all of a sudden it comes back to bite you in the butt.
Yep.
And you learn the hard way that sometimes you're just best to go to a professional rather than trying to figure it out yourself.
When I tried to fix my toilet and found out that that now the valve doesn't work.
Yeah, right. Well, you fixed it, didn't you?
And I couldn't do it. I mean, I probably could, but that's something I just didn't want.
All it amounts to is, you know, so I could save $100 by doing it myself, which could cost me $1,000 once I messed it up.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah, or more.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or more. So the whole thing about professionals, the reality is, and we all learn this, I think, the hard way, professionals earn what they get paid, and their way of earning it is to protect you the best they can. So
right.
Whether it's a tax
through
preparer,
knowledge,
financial advisor,
exactly,
an attorney, whatever it might be, hey, and believe you, I told you my $30,000 dog story.
Yes.
Tell us again. Oh, I haven't heard it. That's okay.
Dog.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You didn't hear that story?
No,
I think
it was a $15,000 dog when I heard it, but you know, in time.
Inflation.
Didn't I mean, really, did you ever not hear
No, I don't think I heard it, honestly.
So anyway, I'm living out in Sewell's Point, which is an uppity neighborhood, and I'm living large and life is good. And my next door neighbor kid was a redneck wannabe. You ever heard of redneck wannabes?
Mm-hmm.
Now this kid is living large, parents are making big money, big house, but he has his pit bull dog and his pickup truck. So the kid goes out and he chases hogs with his pit bull and stuff. Well, one of his buddies had a dog that didn't know it was a pit bull, really wasn't a pit bull, loved running with the dogs, but you bite a pig, you got to be out of your mind. I'm not going to bite a pig. I'll run and chase and I'll bark, but I'm not biting that pig. So the kids wanted to kill this dog because they're, you know, they didn't like him. So the kid next door brings the dog home. Now, his parents wouldn't let the dog in the house. So the dog came over and knocked on my door and says, hi.
The dog knocked on your
door? Yeah, he knocked on the door. Now, I'm paraphrasing a little bit.
Okay.
But he came over and he says, I'm a nice dog and I'm smiling and I'm hungry. Would you feed me? So I said, of course. And I fed him and he's a lovely dog. My dogs liked him. He's just a lovely dog. Sweetheart dog. So this goes on for a few weeks, maybe a month or three.
You keep feeding this dog?
Yeah. I feed the dog.
Nice.
Now, even if a CPA came to my door and he's hungry, I'd feed him too. So one day the UPS guy came in the driveway and this neighbor dog, not my dog, looks and says, huh, he's got a uniform on. I don't like uniforms. So he rushed the UPS guy and he did not bite him, but he tore his pants.
Oh.
Mm. So the UPS guy says, I'm not coming here anymore. Because your dog tried to bite me. Now, the dog's standing there grinning. He says, look, it, I got rid of this guy. You know, I mean, he's not gone yet, but I've tried. And so I said to the UPS guy, I says, not my dog. And I hate to tell you, but that dog is gone. Now, at this point, I've got to be not nice guy and get rid of the dog. A few weeks later, I get sued.
The UPS driver sues you.
I had two lawsuits, one from him and one from his wife.
Oh, loss of service.
Loss of consortium.
Oh, consortium.
Consortium. Yeah.
Okay.
100,000 each, and they sued not only me, they sued the next door neighbor and the real owner of the dog. They sued everybody. Of course, if you're going to sue, you know, you're going to, right? Alan is.
You can put as many people in a lawsuit as you want.
The
judge will just throw out those who shouldn't be there.
So then what happens is, I'm laughing about this thing. It's the funniest thing I've ever heard. It's not even my dog. And
it is your dog, though.
Oh, well, wait a minute. You're going to steal the thunder.
You're stealing my thunder.
I'm
so
sorry.
Then what happens is I get a deposition. Now, those of you who don't know what a deposition, this is you're going to be interviewed and you're on record. You swear to what is telling us the truth. This is court acceptable information. And they ask you questions. Well, one of the questions was, did you feed the dog? And I said, of course I fed the dog. The dog was hungry. Uh-huh. And that was the only question out of 6,000 questions they asked that made any difference.
That's true.
So then time goes on, and finally there's a court date. I've got to go to court. And well, I figure, well, I better go hire an attorney. So I called my buddy Steve Glucksman, and I say, Steve, I got to do this thing, the stupidest court in the world, and, you know, we're going to throw it out. He looks at it, and he calls me back, and he said, Joe, you are stupid.
Whoa.
And I said, Steve, okay, well, why now? He said, because you fed the dog. And I said, well, what's wrong with that? He says, you admitted you fed the dog. Now, if the dog had not come in your house and fed him, if you had not set out a bowl for the dog, if the dog had come and stolen food from your dogs, that's, you didn't feed him. But the fact that you admitted you fed the dog in the state of Florida, that's ownership.
Wow. Oh.
The case is over.
Yeah.
Wow.
Christmas Eve, $30,000.
Wow.
Like Steve said, the attorney says, Joe, you could win this case and it'll cost you $50,000 to win. Because expert witnesses, we got to prove the kid didn't have damage to his knee. The wife dropped her sword. Evidently, he got better. But anyway, the key I'm trying to say was, here was stupidity, or let's use the word ignorance. I'm going to use stupidity because it was me. If I'd have gone to an attorney as soon as I had this suit served.
Yes, he would have coached you.
He would have coached me and
that's
said,
right.
This is
and
what you do.
Counseled you and said, don't tell him you fed the dog.
Right. All he would have said was, if you go to a deposition, we're not going to answer certain questions. You don't have to answer every. He could, and whatever he could have done was better than what I did. Right?
Right.
Once it's out of the toothpaste,
that's what I keep saying almost every opportunity I have. That's why you go to professional people.
There you go.
And spend a little bit more money to get great advice. And in Wisconsin, your story, we call that constructive possession. In other words,
it's the same thing as you fed the dog.
Right. Yeah. but occasionally, even though I am retired, I do want to use a couple of legal terms once in a while.
I like that.
Just to keep my brain
going. Keep your brain
right.
Well, and see, attorneys have to have four-syllable words, otherwise they can't wear a label on them that says attorney, right?
That's right.
Vince, attorneys
the
only
more syllables,
the more syllables, the more you can
Vince,
charge.
We're about a little more than halfway through tax season, and you've seen quite a few returns so far. Have you noticed any returns or a number of returns where people are actually going to get a benefit when the tax law, I mean, when the taxes are done using the new law?
Next year.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My experience with it is what I suspected all along, and that is for those people who don't itemize their deductions.
So then the administration was telling the truth when they said most people would benefit from
what I can see, yes. Yeah. Especially those people who were in, let's call it, less than $250,000 of annual income.
Adjusted gross.
No.
Is it gross?
Adjusted gross. Yeah, exactly. Adjusted gross. Because they'll benefit for two ways. One is the net additional deduction that they'll be getting, because the standard deduction is doubling, but you're giving back your exemption. So net, you're up about $4,000 in deductions. And that's not $4,000 in tax dollars, it's $4,000 in deductions. When you multiply it by your rate, let's say you're in a 25% rate, that's $1,000. So that might mean $1,000 in your pocket. Now, you know, some people think that that's just crumbs. Other people think that's a lot of money.
Hey, let me just tell you something.
That's a lot of money.
I don't think there's a person sitting in this room that started at the top of the income strata and worked their way down. You know, a buck an hour was the going wage when I first started working. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that was just what it was.
Was that turn of the century?
Oh, yeah, it was.
The Industrial Revolution really did help.
It did help. You know,
unionization.
When I didn't have to ride
the bucket of quarters.
When I didn't have to ride the horse to work, it helped a lot. You know, but that horse cost more than the car. Yeah. Feeding that horse was tough.
Let me ask you: when you went to school, did you go barefoot?
Of course.
Was it all uphill?
But all the way through the snow too.
Yeah.
10 miles each way, 3 feet of snow every day. Even in the summer.
And you delivered milk before you did all that.
You know, I tell you, this was not a pretty picture.
I can see that.
You know, being a milkman, my dad, this was not a pretty picture. I think the only reason he had sons is somebody to help him carry those cases of milk. You know, that was it.
But I remember those guys.
You remember those guys?
They'd come around, the whole milk, they put them in his bottles and deliver.
You remember when it froze and the top would pop off and cream was on the top of the bottle?
Yeah. I was born in June of 1946, and in January of 1947, Milwaukee had a mega snowstorm. And my parents told me that for 3 days, milk was delivered to the house by fire truck.
Wow.
Because that was about the only vehicle that could get through.
Wow. Well, it's back in the day when people worked together. I don't think they do that now.
No. That was the World War II generation.
1-888-221-8990. I want to talk for a couple minutes about a subject that we talked to this morning that came up to me by a prospect. And we've talked about this on the radio in the past, and those are called index annuities. Mm-hmm. Index. Well, there's also, now let me just tell you folks, when you hear that word fixed index annuity, let the hair rise up on your neck, pay attention. These are very difficult instruments to understand. You really have to pay attention. And one of the main words that occurs in this instrument is the word cap, C-A-P, where they often cap the amount of money you're allowed to make. So I'm not going to get into a long dissertation on that, but I wanted to on life insurance. Wow. Because now here's an instrument called a index life insurance contract.
Tell us about those, Joe. How do they work?
It's a very interesting thing. Now, let's just take an easy analogy of life insurance. Let's take a bucket. Give me a pail. And we fill that pail full of money. And then at the bottom of the pail, we have a spigot, and money comes out of the spigot, and this is called a life insurance contract. Money comes into the top of the pail, and it comes out of the bottom of the pail to pay the cost of the insurance.
Okay.
Now, if you have what's called whole life insurance, sometimes you put more money in the top of the pail than is necessary to pay for the life insurance, and the life insurance spigot takes the money out, but the top of the pail is paid an interest rate.
Okay.
Now, the interest rates vary over a period of time because interest rates change. So people used to say, okay, I can buy whole life insurance and it costs me, let's say, $1,000 a year. But the reality is I'm probably going to save $100 a year, and that goes into the savings account, which is paid a form of interest. And then I'm still going to die someday. And if I don't die, maybe when I'm 60 or 70 years old, I might have $10,000 or $20,000 in cash saved up. Now, let me give you this. It's against the rules to sell life insurance as a savings or an investment contract, because it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the bucket. I put money in the bucket. At the bottom of the bucket comes the spigot to pay for the life insurance. The older I get, the more money comes out of the spigot. The money going in the top may be more than is needed to cover the spigot. That money would generate some interest. How much interest is a really good question. So now, a wrinkle is we have an index life insurance contract. So what we're going to do is put that money back in the bucket. We still got the same spigot on the bottom. But the money in the bucket that's excess money is going to earn interest based on an index. Index. Now, the index that is most known and used is called the Standard & Poor's 500. Most people, if you're hidden and you're young, you may not have heard of it, but the average person, if you turn on the tube anytime, the news, whatever, they'll come up and they'll talk about the Dow, which is 30 companies, and the Standard & Poor's 500, which is 500 companies. These are the
known as the S&P 500,
S&P
right?
500, which are America's biggest companies.
Right.
So we got now, and they use in the business the S&P 500 as the benchmark for how well the stock market is doing. So, Alan, last year, what in the 12 months, about what did the S&P 500 generate?
Approximately 25%.
So that means if you were invested, let's say, in a mutual fund, or an index fund that was totally invested in those 500 companies, and you put 100,000 in on January 1st, by December 31st, you probably had about $125,000, okay? Now, you're invested in a fund that is invested in the S&P 500. So now, here comes the index life insurance company. They say, we are going to pay you interest based on the index. Now, they didn't say we're going to pay you interest of what you earn in the index. We're not going to pay you the growth in the index. We're going to pay you interest based on the index.
So it's just that's the base calculation. You start with that.
You
and
start
then
with
there
that.
Are other calculations that come after that.
Okay. So here comes the calculations. If we have it point to point, and it grows from 1 to 25, it grew by 25%, or 100,000 grew to 125,000. Well, very often these indexes, because they are not in the market, it's based on, it's called an index contract, it's based on the index, they are not in the market. People think they are, but they are not. They are paying interest based on the market. Whenever you have a fixed contract, the government says, when you say the word fixed annuity, fixed life insurance, fixed insurance contract, it's based on an interest rate. And the money, 90%, 80% of it has to be invested in bonds, and bonds are paying basically 2 and 3%. So how does this insurance company get to pay you more than 2 or 3%? Well, they can't. They can't. Because that's all they're bringing in the door, and they've got to take a little bit off to make a profit and pay commissions, fees, expenses, and profit.
That's how they go out of business.
So what they do is they put a word in the contract called caps, C-A-P. It's not a cap you put on your head. It's a cap that fits over the top of the interest that says, if it goes up too much, we ain't going to pay you. We're only going to pay you up to the limit of the cap. The caps I've seen have been as low as 2%, some as high as 3%. In years past, some as high as 4. So last year, if you were actually invested in the S&P 500, you would have gone up 25. but because you're in an index instrument that's based on with a cap, you may have only gained two or three. Or I've not seen one that's paid four that's recent, but two or three.
But Joe, are these guaranteed to start with? Let's say you got a rate of 2%.
Right.
So in other words, they'll cap you on the upside, but what if it goes below the two? Do they still pay you the two?
No, they have usually a floor, which might be one.
Wow.
So they say, okay, fine, we'll pay you as high as the cap will go, which is two or three, but we'll never pay you less than one. Unless the index lost money this year. Then we may not pay you anything, but we don't take any money away from you. You've got to be very, very careful
of
these.
So they kind of balance the risk, right? So they're capping you on the upside, so it means that they gain on that. Let's say it went up 3.5%. They capped you at 3. There's another 0.5% that they keep. Right?
No, no, because you're not invested in the market.
Yeah, but you said the formula is based on the S&P.
The formula is
cap.
With the cap.
So if the S&P went up 25%, they're going to give you 3.
That's it.
That means they get to keep the other 20%.
No,
right?
You're thinking they're in the market. They can't be invested in the market in a fixed contract. They can only be invested in bonds.
Oh,
you see, here's where the 99% of the people don't understand it.
Got it.
I mean, look at you. Here's the guy, and we talk about this subject constantly. This is a difficult, difficult product because when it says fixed index, you're in a fixed contract with a fixed interest rate, but they cap the interest rate. They cap it in the contract.
Well, what's confusing to most people then is why even say it's based on the S&P 500?
Right.
Because this is a vehicle that is allowed by states, which I don't know how they ever did, but to me, it's a way to make you, the consumer, think you have a chance to make money without taking risk.
Yeah, but why introduce, and that's a very good question, why introduce the whole
concept of an S&P? It does not pass my smell test, to be honest with you.
If Dan Warren was sitting here right now, who's in the insurance business exclusively, he would say, you know, he won't say this word for word, but I'm going to say it word for word. Insurance commissioners, almost none of them are in the insurance business or ever have been. It's a stepping stone politically. Insurance commissioners run each state, and they make the decision what can be allowed and what cannot be allowed. The insurance lobby is monster. So these companies come in and say, hey, we got this great product that's going to make people money, and it's a good product for the consumer, and they run it through legal and everything, and nobody can figure it out exactly, so it's approved.
The thing sounds fallacious on the surface, Joe, because you're saying they're forced to invest in bonds, yet they're determining your return on the S&P 500.
But then they put a cap because you can't earn more than the bonds are making.
Yeah, so no thank you, Joe. I'm going to pass on this one.
My point is this. Those of you that hear these instruments, all I try to do is educate people. I have sat in numerous houses over the years, and people would say, hey, Joe, I've got this thing. I don't understand it, but I'm supposed to be in the market, but I'm not making any money. How does it work? And I'll say, well, here's what I'm going to do. We're going to call the company up directly. We're going to put them on a speakerphone. You're going to give them authority to talk to me. I'm going to tell them who I am, that I am not your agent of record, but I'm here to help answer questions, and I'm going to ask the questions. And when I'm all done with this, you're going to throw up.
Jeez. Because they didn't
understand.
They didn't understand what they were buying.
They did not understand. Now, were they misrepresented? Maybe. Were they, remember the words, errors of omission?
Yeah.
They weren't told the whole truth.
Yeah, that's the same.
I saw this one the other day, and it was 13 pages of fine print before I found the cap, where it stopped. And I know how to read these things and look for that stuff. The average person would be reading for the rest of their life, and when they hit it, they wouldn't understand it. It's a sad thing, but literally, these things are approved. And can they work? Of course. But the most important part of having it work is understanding what you've got. If you understand what you're getting and what you're limited to and what you can make, then and you want to do it anyway, that's fine. But if you don't understand it, because this index life insurance, it was being sold as an investment, which is against number one rule. You don't sell life insurance as an investment. That's against the rule. Number two, it was saying, hey, you give me 50 grand now, we'll give you this life insurance worth $250,000, and probably in 5 or 10 years, you can take out 50 grand and go spend it, because it's going to make money more than the cost of the insurance.
Well, I remember back in the day, Joe, I'm talking about in the 80s, I bought a whole life policy, yeah, personally. It wasn't sold exactly as an investment,
right,
but there was the understanding that, as you say, the money goes in the pot,
right,
a certain amount comes out to,
right,
pay the life insurance, the rest stays in there and accumulates dough.
Now, so here's, stay still with me. Whole life insurance is legitimate up front. There's no such thing as an index. They give you an interest rate.
Exactly.
And they tell you, here's your guaranteed interest rate. Now, there's a hypothetical they show you. What if the interest rates go up instead of getting the guaranteed, which is 1, 2, or 3? They may pay 4, 5, or 6. So you have an option that you may end up with more cash value. Almost all whole life policies over a period of time ended up with more cash value, unless you live to be 100 years old. Then there may not have been any cash value, but the death benefit was still there.
Right.
Those things were clean, vanilla. There was not really room for misrepresentation.
Got
when
it.
They added this word index to
index them, to it,
I have a problem with it. Hey, I'm not saying they're bad instruments. They are legal, but you have to understand it. And if you don't understand it, any one of these index contracts, quote, you call 1-888-221-8990, say, hey, I want Martech to explain it and teach me how this thing works so I can feel better about what I'm doing.
Amen.
1-888-221-8990.
The lovely lady that called earlier in the show called back. In fact, that's the number I gave you.
Oh.
But she said that there's no enmity between the sons. It was simply a switch deal. Property for property, and so
property.
Yeah.
So
different story.
Everybody's
different
happy,
story.
And yes. I was concerned about that. And you probably heard of the nuclear physicist that was trying to look for a half-life policy. Just something. Okay.
Pastor. Boom.
There's a couple of other jokes that have a nuclear Pastor physicist Dave. At the end of it, right? But,
yeah, right.
But we can't use those on
Pastor
us.
Dave, I have a suggestion for you.
Yes,
stick
sir.
To your day job.
Hey.
Okay.
1-888-221-8990. Now, anybody that doesn't want to talk to us on the radio, and we understand that, you can call the radio station anytime. They'll give you our name and numbers, and we'll be glad to call you back, help you any way we can. What happens is, just so you understand, in our group, cumulatively, not even counting Alan Love as a guest, we have around 200 years of combined experience.
Half of that with one person.
Yeah.
And half of that is Vince.
I was thinking of you, Joe.
How did I know that? But it's what happens is, you know, what is it? Wisdom is an accumulation of knowledge, and you don't get it quickly. When you graduated from college, you knew everything you know today, right?
No way.
That's my
no
point.
Way. Yeah.
You get a degree that gets you open the door, that you have the ability to learn the stuff you need to learn.
That's pretty much the way I understand it,
yep.
Joe. Going to school educates you on how to find the answers to your problems.
There you go.
You don't have memorization.
No. It gives you a toolbox.
And they don't
learn how to use some of the
tools. And they don't teach it all in school. No such thing. Whether it's insurance, I don't care what it is. You learn enough to pass the test to get the credentials. Then you, in order to be credible, it takes some time
takes
and experience.
And a lot of it is, you know, painful.
1-888-221-8990, 888-221-8990. That's toll-free from any place. And Pastor Dave says we got 15 seconds left. Let's get some final words of wisdom from Alan Love, guest attorney.
Well, I'm going to say have a great St. Patrick's Day on the 17th.
I'm staying home.
I'm going out, but very local and not for long.
Thank you guys
Thank
so
you
much.
God bless you.
Until next week.
You've been listening to the Team Martech program. The Team Martech program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS.